Now, we are told by Othello that this fatal handkerchief has certain powers. It occurred to me that we shall never know this, but when we see Iago gloating over the handkerchief, holding it in his hand, and saying, "Trifles light as air, art of the jealous, confirmations strong as proofs of holy writ." When we see him gloating over the handkerchief, and if we know the play, there's something, or as it could be, that it cannot be misused with impunity. That may be one of its powers. But anyway, that handkerchief is fated to bring Othello's downfall in an instant when everything seemed to be going perfectly. This trifle as light as air shows him to be what he is instantaneously, and with confirmations as strong as proofs of holy writ. It is extremely ironical that. Now, let us just consider the question of dramatic art. One could say that one fundamental aspect of dramatic art, because drama is not like anything else. People come to the theatre to be overwhelmed, to be spellbound. The dramatist has a tremendous power in his art, which other artists, of course, composers, music has also that power. But in literature, it is drama that has this spellbinding power, and the audience are there to be spellbound. And one of the fundamental aspects of the art of the dramatist is to create imperative needs in the audience. Well, there are all sorts of ways of doing this. I've mentioned this before in connection with Hamlet, for example. The audience are soon longing to see Hamlet alone with his mother. Soon after the play begins, or after the first one or two scenes, and Shakespeare keeps them waiting for that. When it does happen, it is wonderful, but they have to wait a very long time for that. There's always somebody else on the stage. And what the imperative need which he creates in Othello is the need of truth and light, the audience. It is something which they come subconsciously to long for. And the climax of the play is, to a certain extent, one of the climaxes is in the next to the last scene, which is laid in total darkness in the streets of Cyprus, just occasional torches. It is lit by occasional torches. And this scene is entirely dominated by Iago. He has persuaded Roderigo to kill Cassio, whom he says is his rival for Desdemona's love. And he knows that Cassio is coming in a certain direction, and he places Roderigo in a particular place where he will be able to come out and strike Cassio without any difficulty. And he himself will stand by to help Roderigo if need be. That's what he tells Roderigo. In reality, he is going to stand by to make quite sure that both men die, because he wants to be rid of them both. He owes Roderigo far too much money. And he's afraid that he doesn't know what's going to happen quite when and if Othello accuses Cassio of seducing his wife. because he doesn't know quite what Cassio might not be able to say in his own defense, and he thinks that is a great danger. There, he says, there my great danger lies in that. And it's then that he says, in any case, he has a daily beauty in his life which makes me ugly. No, he must die. And so Iago is waiting there to see that both men die in this fight, not only one. But Cassio is wearing a coat of mail, so that Roderigo's weapon doesn't pierce him at all, and Cassio manages to give Roderigo a very severe wound. Iago comes up behind and he gives Cassio such a slash on his leg, which is not armed, as he thinks to cut the main artery and cause enough bloodshed for him to die. And both are lying on the ground. He breaks Cassio's leg too, probably with the blow. And the cries for help. In the darkness, there are cries for help. Othello enters in the darkness. He hears Cassio's cries for help, and he thinks that Iago has. He's told Iago to kill Cassio. He will kill Desdemona, but Iago must kill Cassio. And he hears Cassio crying for help, and Othello exclaims, "'Tis he, O brave Iago, honest and just, that such noble sense of thy friend's wrong, that hast such noble sense of thy friend's wrong, thou teachest me, that is, you teach me to go and do my part, which is to kill Desdemona.'" And he goes out. Iago, by that time, has just gone out in order to put on a nightgown, because he thinks that Cassio is dying of loss of blood, and Roderigo's lying there wounded, and he wants to appear to have just come out of bed, hearing the cries. He makes a show of binding. He goes to Cassio and makes a show of binding his leg, and then when Roderigo cries out, "Help," and Cassio says, "That's one of them over there, one of the people who attacked me is over there," he goes and kills Roderigo. At least he doesn't kill him, in fact, but he thinks he has killed him. Roderigo sees what has happened just at the last moment. He says it's his seemingly last breath, but he's not dead, in fact. "Oh, damned Iago. Oh, inhuman dog." Cassio and Roderigo are carried off. Emilia is the last to arrive on the scene, and Iago sends her to the citadel to tell Othello what has happened. And at the end of the scene, Iago is left alone in the darkness, and he says, "This is the night that either makes me or foredoes me quite." The remark is a triumphant one, despite the negative ending, because all has gone perfectly to plan. But for all his cunning, Iago had momentarily slipped off his guard earlier that evening in the scene with Desdemona and Emilia. When Othello is convinced of the guilt of Desdemona, he comes and insults her and calls her a whore, and she can't think what has happened. And Emilia hears about it, and Iago comes in for some reason or other, and Emilia says that Othello is jealous. She knows what jealousy is, and her husband has also shown signs of jealousy on occasion. And Emilia says, "I will be hanged if some eternal villain have not devised this slander. I'll be hanged else." Iago says, defy, there is no such man, it is impossible. But Emilia still continues. The Moors advised by some most villainous knave, some base notorious knave, some scurvy fellow, O heaven, that such companions thou dost unfold, and put in every honest hand a whip to lash the rascals naked through the world, even from the east to the west. And when Iago hears that, he's exasperated by his wife's manner of speech. And he says, he tells her to keep quiet, and she's by his reaction, the thought occurs to her, the sudden thought comes to Emilia, is it possible that my husband is this man who has slandered Desdemona? Is it possible? She banishes immediately the thought, but it stays in the back of her mind. Because Iago was exasperated by his wife, and he didn't take the trouble to hide things, to hide his own feelings. Now, in that scene of darkness, the last but one, all the chief characters are present, except Desdemona. And that is significant for what she signifies, because day, night is not her element. Day, lit by the sun of the spirit, is her element. And it is in the next scene, from her dying words, that the longed for light begins to dawn. Othello thinks he has put an end to her life. But when Emilia enters and speaks to him, Desdemona is heard to cry, is heard to say, to murmur, "Oh, falsely, falsely murdered." And Emilia runs to her bed and says to Desdemona, "Who hath done this deed?" And Desdemona says, "Nobody, I myself. Farewell. Commend me to my kind lord. Oh, farewell." Now that last line, "Commend me to my kind lord. Oh, farewell." It means what it says. Not, it is not just a vague message of affection. "Commend me to my kind lord. Speak well of me to Othello. May you be successful. Oh, farewell. May you be successful." Now, without these words, events would certainly be the same in the last scene. If Desdemona had never spoken these words, the events would have been just as they are through the character of Emilia. But the words are there, and we cannot ignore them. And they mean, from now on, the light of Desdemona, that is allegorically and anagogically, the light of the spirit, is shining through Emilia. And even literally it means that, because since Desdemona is now beyond the limitations of this world, Emilia is to commend Desdemona to Othello, and that commendation doesn't take long to begin. Othello says that when Emilia says to Othello, he says to her, "You heard what she said." That is, you heard her say. "You heard her say herself, it was not I." That is, when Desdemona is asked, "Who has done this deed?" She says, "Nobody, I myself." And after that, after she has died. Othello says to Emilia, "You heard her say herself, it was not I." It is as if Othello, for the moment, thought of taking advantage for himself of Desdemona's last words. But it would be entirely against his royalty of nature to do that, to take refuge in such a way. So he says immediately, "She's like a liar gone to burning hell. 'Twas I that killed her. Oh, the more angel she, and you the blacker devil," says Emilia. Othello says, "She turned to folly, and she was a whore. Thou dost belie her, and thou art a devil. Oh, I were damned beneath all depth in hell, but that I did proceed upon just ground," says Othello. "To this extremity, thy husband knew it all." "My husband?" "Thy husband. That she was false to wedlock, I with Cassio." "My husband? Aye, 'twas he that told me first. An honest man he is. My husband." What needs this iteration? "My husband say that she was false. He, woman, I say thy husband. My friend, thy husband. Honest, honest Iago. If he say so, he lies to the heart. She was too fond of her most filthy bargain." Othello takes up his sword at that and says to her, "Peace, you were best." And she says to him, "Thou hast not half the power to do me harm as I have to be hurt. O gull, O dolt, ignorant as dirt, thou hast done a deed. I care not for thy sword. I'll make thee known, though I lost 20 lives." And she cries out for help. And Montano and Gratiano and Iago and others all come in. But Emilia has no eyes for anyone but her husband. She says to Iago, "Disprove this villain, if thou be a man. He says thou told'st him that his wife was false. I know thou didst not. Thou art not such a villain. Speak, for my heart is full." "I told him what I thought, and told no more than what he found himself was apt and true." "But did you ever tell him she was false?" "I did." "You told a lie, an odious, damned lie. She false with Cassio. Did you say with Cassio?" "With Cassio, mistress. Go to, charm your tongue." "I will not charm my tongue. I am bound to speak. My mistress here lies murdered in her bed, and your reports have set the murder on." "I thought so then. I'll kill myself for grief." Those words, "I thought so then," refer back to that incident I mentioned earlier when Iago is impatient with her saying that she wished these slanderers could be whipped throughout the world. And she thought then, the idea came to her, could it be that Iago is this man? But then she banished the idea, she tried to, but it remained. And she says, "I thought so then, I'll kill myself for grief." Because then, if she had only acted then, she could have saved Desdemona's life by telling, by denying that that Desdemona could possibly be false. Iago says to her, "What, are you mad? I charge you, get you home. Good gentleman, let me have leave to speak. 'Tis proper I obey him, but not now. Perchance, Iago, I will ne'er go home." Othello says, "Then, I know this act looks horrible and grim, 'tis pitiful. But yet Iago knows that she with Cassio hath the act of shame 1,000 times committed. Cassio confessed it." Cassio actually had Iago tells Othello that Cassio had confessed his love affair with Desdemona to him, which is a complete lie, of course. "And she did gratify his amorous works with that recognizance and pledge of love which I first gave her. It was a handkerchief, an antique token my father gave my mother." "Oh heavens," says Emilia, "oh heavenly powers, come, hold your peace. 'Twill out, 'twill out. I peace? No, I will speak as liberal as the north. Let heaven and men and devils, let them all cry shame against me, yet I'll speak. Be wise and get you home. I will not." Iago makes a move to stab Emilia, but Gratiano stops him. "O thou dull Moor, that handkerchief thou speak'st of, I found by fortune, and did give my husband. For often, with a solemn earnestness, more than indeed belonged to such a trifle, he begged of me to steal it." "Villainous whore," says Iago, "she give it Cassio. No, alas, I found it, and I did give it my husband. Filth, thou liest. By heaven, I do not, gentlemen. Oh, what should such a fool do with so good a wife?" Then Othello says, "Are there no stones in heaven but what serve for the thunder?" Meaning, how can heaven allow this man to exist? Why have not thunderbolts killed him long since? Then he runs at Iago with his sword, but Iago is too quick for Othello, and he stabs Emilia. He stabs his wife and then runs out. And Emilia falls to the ground. She's fatally wounded. Iago runs out, then everybody follows, leaving Othello and Emilia alone. And Emilia asked to be laid on her mistress's bed. She's laid beside Desdemona. And she says, "Moor, she was chaste. She loved thee, cruel Moor. So come my soul to bliss, as I speak true. So speaking as I think, I die. Now, to be gripped by sacred art does not mean concentration on the literal meaning to the exclusion of everything else. Because the literal meaning is already on its way, you might say, to all the other meanings. We've already seen, as regards the allegory, that it is in a sense more apparent to the audience than the literal meaning. And where the devil is, there is also his hold on mankind, which concerns the anagogical meaning, and also ultimately the way of extraction from that hold. That is the lesser mysteries, which always imply beyond themselves the greater mysteries. You can say that in a play there is a series of experiences. The audience are drawn into a play like Othello very quickly. They can't analyze what they're experiencing, but they do experience things at different levels. One can say that in many plays there is a series of experiences. Deception by oneself or by another, for example. Blindness, tragic error, then enlightenment, contrition, atonement. That's what happens in this play and in many other plays. And it's impossible to analyze what exactly happens to the audience, and it's impossible for them to analyze, but they do, the best of them, the more intelligent or sensitive of them, do experience these things I've mentioned, that is deception, blindness, tragic error, enlightenment, contrition and atonement at different levels, simultaneously. Now, in Othello, unlike Hamlet and King Lear, hell and purgatory are treated separately and successively, at least as far as the protagonist is concerned. Almost the whole play is taken up with Othello's descent into hell. The soul personified by the Moor gradually plumbs the very depths of error, that is, of thinking that black is white and that white is black, that falsehood is truth and truth falsehood. But although the descent is gradual, there is no corresponding gradual development, as there is in Hamlet. The first stage of the journey only becomes spiritually effective when, at the bottom of hell, the truth suddenly breaks in upon Othello, like a flash of lightning which lights up in retrospect the whole descent that he had made in darkness, and he is transformed in an instant from a dupe to a wise man. Then there follows purgatory. He's left alone with Desdemona's body, and that is one of the greatest tests, that scene. The same scene, of course, where the bed is, where the tragedy has taken place. One of the great tests of an actor, a great actor. It must be one of the most difficult scenes to act, that. This purgatory which Othello goes through. But then, in that experience, he has gained just what he needed to gain. He's become a wise man. He's become a priest king. And from that moment, a wonderful calm seems to settle upon him. The greater mysteries in this play are indicated, of course, as I mentioned last time when briefly referring to other plays, the marriage sheets upon the bed. Desdemona has made a great point to Emilia that she should lay the marriage sheets on the bed that night. And that is what as much stress is put on that as is put in Henry the Fourth, of the fact that the king dies in the Jerusalem chamber of the palace. Both these things, the marriage sheets and the Jerusalem chamber, have the same significance. And Othello lies beside his wife on the bed of death, that is, on the marriage sheets. Antony, when he kills himself, as Othello does, he says what is mysteriously the same situation as Othello's: I will be a bridegroom in my death and run unto it as to a lover's bed. That's what Antony says when he is about to kill himself, which he doesn't succeed in doing. It's exactly the same situation as in Othello. But as for Emilia, the case is not quite the same, because Emilia has to go through a certain purgatory together with her, simultaneous with her descent. The beginning of Emilia's purgatory is her mistress's death. And then she remembers, she comes gradually to see that she is to blame. First of all, she thinks just for having suspected her husband, truly suspected him, and then not said anything about it. And that has not saved her mistress's life, as she could have done. But when finally she comes to know that it was her handkerchief, that is, the handkerchief she had given her husband, which is the only concrete thing Othello had to make him believe that Desdemona was unfaithful to him. When she knows that is almost a death in life to her. That is her final purification. When she says earlier on the words I quoted, when Othello threatens her with his sword, when she says, "Thou hast not half the power to do me harm as I have to be hurt," that shows already a change in her character, that she's a newfound sensitivity which she lacked. And so she also is laid on the marriage bed, which is the gateway to the greater mistress. She also is a purgatorial pilgrim. I just mentioned that Othello, the last scene of Othello, when he appears at the end of the play, it is one of the greatest, his farewell speech is one of the greatest speeches in Shakespeare, and the impression made by Othello is overwhelming when he says to Lodovico, he thinks, when they say, "You must come with us, and we're going back to Venice," and he says, "A word or two before you go," meaning that he is not coming with them. He knows that he has reached his end. This is the end of his journey. I won't read, I think it's getting rather late. I won't, and also I don't want to feel capable of reading that last speech of Othello, which is so wonderful, where he says that you shall speak of me as I am, nothing extenuate nor set down aught in malice. When you shall these unhappy deeds relate, speak of me as I am, nothing extenuate nor set down aught in malice. Then must you speak of one that loved not wisely but too well, of one not easily jealous, but being wrought, perplexed in the extreme, of one whose hand, like the base Judean, threw a pearl away richer than all his tribe, of one whose eyes, albeit unused to the melting mood, dropped tears as fast as the Arabian trees their medicinal gum. Set you down this. And then he goes on to say that and tell them that he once killed a Turk in Aleppo who spoke ill of Venice and traduced the state. I smote him thus. He takes out a dagger which they think he hasn't got and stabs himself with it. And then he staggers to the bed where Desdemona lies. But that ending is when it's well performed, is quite overwhelming. Well, that is, I think, I've said enough. And she will kill herself and make death proud to take us. But in Romeo and Juliet, I always feel that that suicide is too much set in the Middle Ages to be... I'm changing my mind about that a bit, because the symbolic meaning of the death is made so clear by Shakespeare. But I have no... I don't think we can object in any way to the suicide of Othello, because Othello, although he is a Christian technically, we are made to feel that he belongs to some pre-Christian origin. There's something mysterious about the origin of Othello. He's not a European, and we don't know what is it. There may be some... After all, Othello is committing an act of justice when he kills himself. I mean, he's killing himself partly because he has been a murderer and he deserves death. He's administering a certain justice to himself. I don't think anybody feels anything about Othello's suicide as they do about possibly Romeo and Juliet. And as I said, Antony and Cleopatra is another case that stands outside. But on the other hand, Shakespeare in King Lear and Hamlet makes a strong point that suicide is a deadly sin. Gloucester is not allowed to commit suicide. He has to... the readiness is all, says Hamlet. You have to be ready for death. The ripeness is all. Hamlet himself says that if only suicide were not forbidden, I would kill myself. But I think there's really no problem. But it's a good question, nonetheless. Now, I think that question will have to be the last, because...